Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. And today is, well, what is it? August
21st.
Thank you, Shonda. My ever reminder and my buddy pal person here. my right hand. So thank you. So the 21st, and because I, you know, time is irrelevant. So the fact that we have to put a date and a time and anything on it is beyond me, so that's what you're here for.
Okay,
thank you. And let's see. Yeah, so the 21st, and it's gorgeous. I don't know what it's like, and we'll talk to Victoria here in a minute and see what it's like where she is, but it's beautiful here. I think it's supposed to rain tonight, but it got cooled off. It's nothing like August.
No.
It was hot, and it's just gorgeous now.
Wore long sleeves for the last 3 days.
I think it's like 70s today.
Yes.
Wonderful. And anyway, so it's made everybody cheerful. The animals are all jumping around and happy. And it's just gorgeous. So I want to give out the call-in number, if anybody wants to call in with any questions or anything. It's 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. And let's see, we have our classes coming up starting in September in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. We have a level 2 class and a level 1 class. The level 3 class is already full. And those other two classes are really filling nicely.
Oh, yes.
So they're in the middle of the month, and you can get information on those. That's on the QHHT classes. And information on those are on the DoloresCannon.com page.
Uh-huh.
And we'll have the new QHHT site up soon,
mm-hmm.
and that will be QHHTOfficial.com. So be looking for that. It's a beautiful site, and it'll be out very, we're hoping the 1st of September. That's our goal date, so we're shooting for that. So we're hoping. And then the last week of September, I'll be leaving to go to Spain, and we'll be doing level 2 in Spain, and that's open. Even though it will be translated into Spanish, it's English and Spanish, so that's open to really, you know, anybody. And that's Europe, that covers Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So level 2, and then I go to China and do a level 2 there, and then we're having a reunion of the practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a lot of fun.
So
and then I go from there to Melbourne, Australia. So, and I've just booked a ticket. So, I mean, it's a round the world trip. I mean, it really is. So going to Melbourne and doing a level 2 class out there. And then, and I think the level 3 class just filled up there. So that's
yep.
Cool. And then going to Hawaii and from there. Yeah. And then doing a level 2. So fun.
Gonna have a busy October.
Yes, it's full. And then coming home. So, yeah, that's all full. So all of that can be, you can get more information. So anybody interested in maybe doing, so those you need to do the level one. You have to have the level 1 before you can do the level 2. So, and that you can do that online, or you can take the level 1 live here in Arkansas next month. Yeah, and then you can run around and go around the world with me. No, so do the level 2. So anyway, so that's a little of the schedules coming out. And then before we get started with our special guest tonight, I wanted to give a special shout out to Patricia in the Redwoods. I found out that she listens to us every Friday night.
Oh, yay!
Isn't that cool?
Yes.
You know, because we never know.
Right.
And I just thought that was so wonderful. She said she loves us and she thinks we're wonderful. And so I wanted to say, hey, Patricia.
Hi, Patricia.
That is so cool. But she lives in the Redwoods.
Nice.
So that is wonderful.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, if anybody else wants to let us know they're listening, we'll give you a shout out too. Okay? All right. So Anyway, our special guest tonight is Victoria Pendragon, and she is one of our authors. And she has two books with us. Her first book was Sleep Magic, and that one came out, a few years ago. And then this one just came out. It's Feng Shui from the Inside Out. And what I want you to do, first of all, welcome, Victoria.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. But what I want to do, first of all, Victoria, is if you can kind of give people an idea. I know you've been on before, but for those that, you know, maybe, you know, don't know you and everything, if you can give us an idea of, you know, your background and where you came from. I know you've kind of been into metaphysics probably most of your life, but just kind of usually, you know, how this all came about and where you came from and how you stumbled into all of this stuff and, you know, just where it all came from. And then we'll get into the books and where they came from. Okay.
I need a big nutshell for this, but
we've got 50 minutes. So.
Okay. I'll try and do the fast forward thing. I guess I actually began my training in what people might call metaphysics when I was 4 years old, because at 4 years old, I was a part of a sexual trafficking scheme thought up by my grandfather, and I had to leave my body. And when I left my body, for reasons that are probably only known to my interdimensional soul, I dove out of my body into the earth, and I traveled into the earth, and then from there up into the trees, of which I became a part. And the trees gave me direction and information and many things like that about life in general. I mean, just, you know, that's what's going on down there. This is why those people are doing that. This is what they think they're doing. This is what they're really doing, that sort of thing. And so consequently, when my parents trundled me off to Catholic school and they showed me a catechism, I went, no, that's not it. And it never took. I remained, you know, the Jesuits, I think they say, give me a child till it's 7 years old and the child is mine for life. Well, the trees had me at four. And I was theirs. And
you were a tree.
I was a tree. And from that time on, my primary spiritual grounding has been very, what you'd call earth-based. It's not unlike the way that most of the indigenous peoples of the United States approach spirituality. And so I had that going as a child. Also as a child, I had the perhaps dubious misfortune of also being a victim of incest. And in a way, for me, that was a good thing, because at least there was love involved there. I mean, it was fake love, but I thought it was love. So it was better than just being marketed. And so I had some support. And my father was very reasonable with me as I grew up, telling me things like that I did not have to respect him, because people had to earn respect, and if he hadn't earned mine, he understood that, and things of that nature. And so, while on the one hand I had an awful lot of overwhelm in my life, it was just too much for a little person, all that sex.
Oh, yeah.
And on the other hand, I had the trees who held me up. When I got married a second time, my second husband said to me, When we make love, he said, Where are you going? He said, You're not here. And I said, Oh, I'm in the trees. Like it was the most normal thing. I thought everybody went in the trees. I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what I did. And so he asked me if I wouldn't stay there with him for a change. And I did. I agreed to that. And it had strange consequences because I had spent all life up until that point. I guess I was 30, no, I was 40-something when I met him, or, yeah, just about 40. And I had already been married. I'd had two children. I had led an extremely promiscuous life. I had also, along the way, learned how to do astrology, how to read tarot cards, all this other stuff that I just naturally fell into as a result of my earth-based spiritual proclivities. And so I had, on the one hand, all this spiritual stuff to support me. On the other hand, my psyche was shattered, and I behaved very, very badly. So I met this man. He asked me to please not go into the trees, which was the only thing I knew how to do. And within 4 years, having lost custody of my children in the divorce and having been required to stay present during sex, which is something I didn't want to do, I became physically ill with a fatal and incurable disease that crippled my entire body and was supposed to kill me in 6 months. And again, I went the alternative way. Well, there's no cure for scleroderma, which is what I had, and it was in all my organs, and it had tightened up all my skin, and I was in constant, unremitting pain, fairly awful. And I kind of thought I might like to die, but I certainly didn't want to be in a lot of pain. So right. At that point, I brought to mind, you know, a number of the things I knew about energy and life, and I started having these amazing dreams. And at first I was angry because I was having them and they were so wonderful, and life wasn't. And then I realized, ah, wait, thank you, trees. The dreams are telling me something. And I got it. And one night in a big, big thunderstorm that was right over the house, I mean, lightning was coming down and striking trees around the house, I just walked out into the storm and into the lightning and into the trees and took back my power. And I started attracting unusual offers of alternative therapies, and I studied shamanic journeying, and I was fortunate enough to meet up with a bunch of Lakota medicine women who assisted me in my healing. I did all kinds of alternative things. In addition, I was gifted with an opportunity to try some experimental medicine that wasn't working on anybody, but, you know, it was an experiment. So it wasn't the first time in my life I had been experimented on. I had tuberculosis when I was 6 months old, when there was no cure for tuberculosis. And I was a guinea pig then, so I thought, what the heck, we'll try it again. And one thing led to another, and I became the first person to completely heal from the disease in 1 year's time, which the doctors thought was their treatment, and I'm pretty convinced was the entire thing. I don't think it was just their experimental treatment. It didn't heal anybody else. So I think it was rather a combination of all these things that I'd done. And many of the healers that I worked with had said to me along the way, you know, you're a healer. And I thought, no, I'm sick. But they kept saying that. And so then I wasn't sick. And I thought, well, this is wonderful. I'm not sick. And I get it. I'm not caught in that whole morass of promiscuity anymore. I've somehow ridden that out by becoming, you know, crippled and disfigured. Nobody cares about me anymore. I even became, for the most part, not disfigured anymore, though only my hands were crippled. But I was clearly a different person after this process, just different from the inside out. I wasn't attracting the same kind of attention at all. And I didn't really want to be a healer. And then one day when I was doing yoga in my bedroom, a gigantic light being appeared in the room with me and said, well, it said nothing, actually. the first time it came. And I was terrified because there was a giant light in the room. And I ran downstairs and I told my husband that there was a giant light in the room, and what should I do? And he wisely said, I think you should talk to it. So I went back up the stairs, and I said, okay, here I am. You know, is there something you want to say? And it just said very clearly and simply, the time has come for you to share what you know with others, and disappeared. And that seemed pretty unavoidable. So I at that point, I still didn't know exactly what to do, because I figured, I don't even know what to do. I don't even know what this means. I didn't do any of the things any of the people that had worked on me did. I was just a person stumbling along. And as luck would have it, not long after that, I was at my job, and a woman came up to me while I was working, one of my bosses. And she said, I have a headache. And I said, well, I have some aspirin. And she said, no, you can cure me. And I said, she said, I'll be at your house after work. I said, all right. And she came in, she lay down on my couch, and she said, now put your hands on my head. And I put my hands on her head. And sure enough, I could feel things happening inside her head, which I would later come to find out was energy. And not only did I feel things, somehow I knew how to manipulate them. I later realized where that had come from. It had come from the experience with my abusers when I was young, because the trees had taught me how to feel what the people that were abusing me wanted, so that I could give it to them and get it over with fast. And I put two and two together, and I thought, this is it. I got a gift from that. Mm-hmm. And so I then decided, well, I guess I better go take Reiki or something, because I can't just say to people, I have energy, come on over to my house. So I started taking Reiki, and I took all the levels, and I went up to master level. And then when I was practicing my master level, because my Reiki master, who was a very unusual Reiki master and channeled the energy of three goddesses, he was a man, and he carried the energy of three goddesses, and he told me that I had to every day for a month do an attunement on something. He didn't care if it was a stuffed animal or what. So I decided to do it on my higher self. And once again, the big, bright light being, except this time there was a whole bunch of them, and my whole room was full of them every day for a month. And they made subtle adjustments to what I had been learning from teachers was Reiki, and they made it mine. And it didn't really have a name. It was just, it was different. And I, in retrospect, I suppose that they were simply enhancing the gift that I had that I didn't know that I had. And I went on to become a hands-on healer and was very successful and made a very good living at it, and got very frustrated after about 12 years, I guess, because, well, my friends are like, well, this is great. You know, you have all these return people and you're making money. And I'm like, I don't want return people. I want people to get better. I want to put my hands on them and then they go away and they're fine. And they're like, well, you know, that's not how it works. And, you know, you're helping them and all this stuff. But I noticed that when I would talk with these people, because I became ordained as a minister so that I could be of, you know, better and more reliable service to people, and they would understand that I had a commitment at a spirit level to helping. And I realized that when we talked, I would ask them, you know, about how their life was, because I knew from my own experience that disease doesn't come from nowhere. And the more I read, the more I learned how true that was. And these people, when we would talk, I would say, you know, you'll need to change this about your life and that about your life. You need to consider this about your life or that about your life. And they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't engage. And so one day I just threw up my hands to the universe after this woman had left me, and her name was Victoria. She had suffered tremendous abuse as a child, and it was just so similar that I was moved, and I threw up my hands, and I said to the universe, please send me someone who will tell me what I know that I don't know that I know, so that I can help these people. And within a week, I met that person. And it was a man who unintentionally just had the sort of energy that triggers my energy. You must know about this. I mean, there are three specific people in my life that when I meet them, things just happen like magic. And they set off something in me, and he was one of them. And that night, I went to sleep, and when I woke up, I had sleep magic. And I just started writing, and I just started writing and writing and writing and writing and writing and writing. And it was all about what happens when you're asleep, referring back to the dreams that I had when I had scleroderma and couldn't quite connect with the dreams at first. They were just too good to be true, and realized that they were trying to tell me something. And so I just wrote all this stuff down, and I took every one of my clients, and I said, this is what we're doing now. We're going to do sleep magic. I will help you. I will help you figure out how to do this and what to do. And it grew from there. And I spent about 5 years working with all my hands-on people. And the results were so good. They were just so good that I thought, I can't do this to everybody. I there's not enough of me to go around. So I thought, well, I'll write a book and I'll see if I can get the book published. So I by that time, I was in my third marriage and had moved to West Virginia, where I now reside. And one of my neighbors who has an illness that's chronic offered to edit the book for me and help me, you know, to put it together into something I could present. And she did. And I got a writer's guide, I think it's called, and it has 5 million publishers in it. And I just started going through looking for the words metaphysical, spiritual, and I took little post-its, and I put pink ones on the ones that looked the best. And one by one, I decided what I would do was just take the ones that looked like they would be most suited for me, and I would send them the manuscript. And on the third try, a big envelope came back from Ozark Mountain Publishing, and I thought, oh, they've sent the whole thing back. They didn't have to do that. And I opened it up, and there was a contract inside. And so I had then exactly what I wanted, which was I had a link with a publishing company that could get this book out to people all over the world, because the thing I knew about healing from my own experience first and then from all the people that I worked with was that a vast majority of people who need healing can't afford a one-on-one practitioner. Most of them could afford $15 or so for a book that they could use to help themselves. And to my great joy, now I discovered, I talked with at the conference a number of people, and I talk with online with a number of therapists who are using it with their clients now.
Isn't that exciting?
It's so exciting. It's what I dreamed of. And, you know, I'm not a person who actually believes in manifesting things. I don't. But I dream.
Yeah, and your little baby's out there. It's got feet on it, and it's doing its job. It's going out there and just working and doing its own thing now.
It is, and I support it. I support it every day. I mean, I'm on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook, and I talk about it, and I let people know it's out there. And I know people are still, I still get people, I just bought your book, and I bought two books for my friends, and it's just, I'm thrilled. The book is a far greater service than I could ever have been on my own.
There you go. And there's much more to do. So, let's keep going.
My pleasure.
Okay. So let's carry it forward then. So what brought you forward then to feng shui?
Well, feng shui was one of the skills that I picked up along my own way when I was studying. And I was fortunate enough to meet with a teacher who was as eclectic in her approach to feng shui as I was to healing. And I resonated with her right away. She came from a background. She's from an indigenous people, Lakota also. And so the American traditions fed into her feng shui. So it wasn't all about, you know, hang up a bagua in the corner. And it was more about color and direction and, you know, things that anyone could resonate with. And that resonated with me because it's about the earth. And so I studied with her for a number of years. I became facile in both domestic or residential feng shui and commercial feng shui, and had really excellent success. I had devoted clients. My name got passed around. I had hundreds of consultations under my belt before I decided it was time for me to teach that. And so I actually opened a school and began teaching professional consultants. And it was very, very, very rewarding. But like the healing practice, I came to realize as I was doing the work I was doing with these people that, I mean, it was one thing to put somebody's house in order and to make it the best house it could be and to be balanced with the directions and provide the proper subliminal images for people to resonate with and all of that. It was a wonderful thing. But if they were not ready for it, sometimes it actually backfired on them. Because they would be, you know, they would say to me, "Well, the most dramatic one was a young man who wanted a record contract, a recording contract. He was a musician. Well, mm-hmm. we got him the recording contract, but he wasn't ready for it. He broke his legs and couldn't go on tour because he wasn't ready."
Yeah.
And that was the first of many instances that I experienced where I thought, "No, these people need feng shui on the inside."
Yeah.
And so when Sleep Magic came out, which was well after that and that realization, I began to realize that it would have been useful if I'd had Sleep Magic at the time that I was doing all those consultations. I would have passed it on to people to use because the law of attraction isn't what most people think it is. You know, there's so much talk of The Secret came out and it was all, you know, if you can dream it, you can do it. But you can't.
Right,
you can,
right.
You can dream it, but if your internal programming is set up in such a way that you think you don't deserve things, that you're not worthy of them, you can dream all you want. But if your vibration's not up there with those dreams, it's not going to happen.
Right, that's what I that's a very, very good point. That's what I like to teach in my classes. It's like you've got to look at the world around you, and that will tell you very quickly what you believe and things like that. But you've also got to look at your beliefs and your thoughts.
Exactly.
That's what's supporting everything.
Yeah.
So,
your external reality is exactly what you've created.
Absolutely. You know, and then, yeah, that's it. You know, if you want to know what my condition is at the time, you can look at the state of my car or my house. You can tell real quick the state of my mind. but yeah, and that's where, when you want to know where somebody is, yeah, you just look at their world. That's what they've created, and anybody's world right there. And
yeah,
then, like you said, yeah, look at their manifestation. I mean, that's it.
And it has nothing to do with money or success.
Exactly.
In that kind of a way. It's how happy are they? How joyful are they?
Right. And like you said, it's their beliefs. It's their what do you? It's all that backing it up. So you have to look at your thoughts and your beliefs and everything before you can go. Yeah. But you can dream all day long, but do you believe it?
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. And to believe it, you have to have a good solid foundation of
mm-hmm.
some sort inside you that came from somewhere. It's something that, as a growing up as a child with that background, the only solid foundation I had was my spiritual one.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of my life was a mess. because everything I had been exposed to told me that I was a victim, told me that I was only good for one thing, all kinds of negative things that were part of me that I didn't even know were there, but I had no self-assurance, no confidence. I was terrifically grounded as far as being in the world went, but I couldn't really go out in it and not function properly. I was a mess.
I can only imagine what your trust issues and your view of adults or
and relationships.
Relationships, authority figures, things like that.
Even her sense of love.
I can't even imagine what you worked through.
Well, I more slogged through it than worked through it until I got more conscious. And being conscious made all the difference in the world, and it's been fascinating because, of course, along with my clients, I began to use sleep magic consciously on myself because I knew that when I was ill, it had been working me, in a sense. Once I began to bring my consciousness to it, it became a potent instrument. And I was in my second marriage when that happened, and my second husband was helping me when I was writing the things for my clients. He was helping to edit that work for me to make sure all my punctuation and spelling and everything were correct that I was sending out to my clients. And he said, "This is fascinating stuff. I want to do this too." And so he began to do it at the same time as I was doing it. And 5 years later, we had the best divorce in the world.
Yeah, one of the, what they call that, conscious uncoupling. What I think that's the term now.
I love that. I never heard that before.
Yeah, who was it? Oh, Gwyneth Paltrow used it.
Oh,
uncoupling.
I will have to adapt that. I love that. That's what it allowed us to do. I don't think he was certainly not pleased about it.
Mm-hmm.
I, on the other hand, was thrilled. But we were both you couldn't be more civil. I helped find his apartment for him. He helped find me one. We packed each other's stuff. We moved each other's stuff. I helped him move in. It was wonderful. What happened was that sleep magic did what it does, was that it started to core us down to get us down to our core, to who we really were before all the things that had happened to us and made us be, in a sense, not who we were. Or as they say in human design, we were not self.
Yeah. So you could still, you're respecting yourselves, you're respecting each other.
Yes.
And you were still friends.
Yes. Yes, we remained friends.
Yeah.
And it was, I can't think of a better testimonial for sleep magic. Well, actually, since then, I've had a number of really radical ones. I have some people now that are using it with their children, which is awesome, because the children, of course, don't have any hard programming in place yet. And when you start teaching them how to let go of the little hurts and slights that they get in the day, they're going to be just, they'll be themselves from the get-go.
Yeah.
That's another dream of mine is that children will begin more and more to use this. I'm working with a woman right now that we're hoping down the line to do a book together on sleep magic for children.
Well, that'll be nice.
I think so.
I think, you know, especially these new children are, you know, the ones that it doesn't even necessarily have to be the new children. I think it's just knowing how to work with children, like you said, so that they're not programmed to be people that are not themselves.
Exactly. Exactly.
Great.
Did you want to say something? I couldn't hear it.
Say that louder.
But I think Kaylin could use that greatly. I've got a little six-year-old.
Ah. Yes, and apparently children take to it like a duck to water, from what I understand from the mothers that I've worked with. I mean, because it's such an easy concept. And it really is. It's like the easiest concept in the world. Ultimately, all it is, is learning how to respect your body, being grateful to it, and talking to it as though it were another person, in a sense. Because in so many ways, we are a spirit being that inhabits this vehicle.
Absolutely.
And people are never, the average person is not taught to respect his or her body as this sacred vehicle, which is exactly what it is. And so if you begin to teach children that, for one thing, you teach them something very valuable about who can do what with their sacred vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And for another thing, you begin to establish what I call the most intimate relationship in your life, which is the one you have with your own body. And that's, you know, there's nothing closer. There's nothing closer. My body and I have, we chat all day long. Usually it's telling me, I think you've had enough of that ice cream.
Oh, but come on, surely we can have one more bite.
Yeah. And that's what I try. That really is, at this point in my life, that's the most difficult thing I do. And it's difficult.
Oh, goodness. Well, okay, well, so on the feng shui, let's give some stuff on the feng shui book. Let's promote it some here.
Okay.
Okay. So for those that are not familiar with feng shui, because I know it was a fad a while back, probably about the time that you were doing your work with feng shui.
Exactly.
And I got involved in it a little bit, so I know a tiny bit about it. But the terminology, do you need to know feng shui in order to do this?
Actually, feng shui means, literally, wind, water. And all feng shui is the environment. So everything is feng shui. You know, you say to people, have you feng shui'd your house? Well, you can't feng shui your house, really. Your house is feng shui. So there are a lot of misconceptions about it. And you don't really have to know the terminology to be doing it, because if you are a person who happens to be fortunate enough to be a balanced individual, from however you got that way, the chances are, you know, much as you said earlier, that your house is going to be in order. It's going to be beautiful. Now, there are rules that have been established in traditional feng shui, but rules are a flexible thing, and any system you establish will work in whatever way that it works. There are certain colors, for instance, that are associated with the directions, and that's because the sun shines differently at different times of the day, which you must have noticed. It's a very different light at dawn than it is at dusk.
Right.
So most of the colors of feng shui take that into account. And so when you hear that green is the color of the east, that's because, and they say that green is associated with health and the east is associated with health and well-being. That's because in the morning, all the ions are not yet burned out by the sun, so the air is particularly fresh in the morning. You know, it all has a basis in nature, and it's all very common sense, but it's been codified. And in the book, in Feng Shui from the Inside Out, I give a lot of the basics of feng shui and how you can bring a space pretty easily into alignment with the energies that are around it, with a few simple things. There are certainly many, many, many complex associations that have grown out of feng shui, and I have never much been interested in those, probably because my interests are always going to go back to nature and the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the directions and the colors are the things that matter the most to me. And the common sense things, like clean your toilet, you know? People don't think about feng shui. They don't think, oh, a dirty toilet. Guess what? That's really bad feng shui. If your house is dirty, that's really bad feng shui. Those things are pretty simple. And I discuss those things in the book. I discuss, you know, here's the bottom line. And this is, you know, this is what you want to do in your kitchen. This is how you want your bathroom to be. And basically, free-flowing, clean energy. And then the other big thing, of course, is images. And that's something that can get a little tricky, the images, because they... images, of course, feed our subconscious mind. And they speak, you know, what is it? A picture is worth 1,000 words. And mm-hmm. so one picture can speak volumes to your subconscious mind. And a lot of people don't understand what it means to have a picture affect them in a negative way. For instance, if your house is filled with nothing but pictures of trees in winter, because you like trees in winter and black and white appeals to you, chances are your life is going to be out of balance in some way because your house is out of balance in some way because it's entirely filled with winter.
Okay.
And images of winter, which is a barren time and it's equated with loneliness and death and all those kinds of things. And that's all subliminal. That all comes in subliminally. So balance is key. And what is in a picture is key. Some of the most beautiful life-affirming things you can have in your house are landscapes, especially if you're in the city, because that brings the body back to nature. And it gives it that feeling of growth and the seasons and the change of seasons. And likewise, you don't want to have too many images of, for instance, let's say water. If you have pictures of the beach everywhere and the sea and waterfalls and all that, that's too much. It's too much water. And water is equated with the emotions and with feelings. And so the person with that much in there is apt to be a bit more labile than they might want to be and perhaps crying a bit much. And on the other hand, maybe they have mood swings. So the pictures affect at a subliminal level, and it because there is something in feng shui that was, it's not invented for the United States, but it was translated differently for the United States so that we Americans could have a simplified version of what feng shui was, and that's where you end up with phrases that you might have heard like, the wealth corner or the relationship corner, things like that. Well, they aren't corners. They're whole areas. And ideally one is speaking to relationship all the time because what you want is a healthy, balanced relationship, much like you want a healthy, balanced life. But, you know, there get to be these things. And so then people think, well, I need a picture in my relationship corner. I know. I want to marry a guy that looks like, I don't know who, because I don't know movie stars or TV stars or anything, because I don't have television. But, you know, there'll be some icon, some, you know, and so they'll hang a picture of that person in the corner. And, you know, you're not going to meet that person probably. Unless you're another movie star, then it might work. And so instead of doing what the person has intended it to do, they've put this unattainable dream out for themselves, and it's never going to come true. In fact, it's probably going to work the opposite way. And I have seen many, many, many laughable things in my career as a feng shui consultant, but one of my favorites was the house I went into. Charming. Girl had a lot of art, beautiful art. But for some reason, was fond of pigs.
Okay.
And had a lot of pictures of pigs. And when I asked her why she had wanted the consultation, she told me she was interested in having a partner, but she just kept meeting pigs.
Oh, no.
I said, I got a quick fix for you.
And she didn't make the association.
No. No.
No.
And people don't. And that's why they call consultants in, I guess, because, you know, I have gone into houses where I have been able to stand in the door of the main entry room and say, okay, so you're not satisfied with your job. Nobody seems to respect you. You can't hold down a relationship. And they're like, how do you know this? I'm just looking at the stuff hanging on your walls. So I talk about that kind of thing in the book, hoping to give people a little bit of grounding for themselves so that they can establish, along with the book is also filled with sleep magic assignments, actually, for the first part of life, for the first 7 years of life, because that's when we get most of our programming in. And so between those two things, I hope that that book will help people get a good, you know, I guess, foundation, good roots in their own house so that their house can support them too, because your house affects you and you affect your house. Both those things are true.
Sure.
So it goes both ways. So I attempted in the book to help balance that equation for people.
Now, does a book need to be read in any certain way?
No, neither of the books does. Some people like to just do all the assignments and then read the book. Mm-hmm. I recommend just reading the book and skipping the assignments, getting the gist of the whole and the flavor of the whole thing, using the parts of the book that you can use every day that way, and then just doing the assignments as you go along.
Okay.
Because I think both of the books have a lot to offer in a general way. And I think that if you're just going to read an assignment and then another assignment and then another assignment, you're apt to forget there's a book around them.
Right.
Because you're so wrapped up in the assignments. But I would prefer a person to get the most out of the book that they can, which means just read the book.
Just read it, yeah.
And absolutely. Then after you've read the book, go back and do the assignments.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I understand people being excited about having a chance to do the assignments because they're pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, very cool.
Yes. That's got me rethinking my house.
I know. I'm trying to think about what pictures I have on the wall. Looking at the walls here in my office right now, too, going, okay.
It was always. It's always very interesting, because even if you don't know like what part of the room a thing is supposed to be in, it can still be saying something. Wherever it is, it's saying something about something. Like for instance, a person's bedroom has certainly all the areas that are considered in the Bagua, but the bedroom is the relationship room. It is everything in that room speaks to your relationship. Just like the kitchen is the health room, as is a bathroom a health room. And everything in those rooms speaks to your health and well-being. Because that's the nature of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And the living room or a den, too, might be considered a relationship room as well, but a social relationship room, as opposed to an intimate relationship room.
Right.
And those things are very different, so that everything in that room speaks to social relationships and what you have in mind. And by the way, just for anybody who's listening, your pictures of your family belong in the living room, not in your bedroom. Nobody should be in your bedroom but the people who sleep in that bedroom, except for children. And children should have in their bedroom, until they are old enough to object to it, pictures of their parents. Because they need to be reminded that they have someone that cares for them, that looks out for them. they need that energy with them as they're growing up, as when they're little kids. They need to know that. I always recommend putting them, ideally, like at the beside the bed, at the head of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where people often would put pictures of angels or something.
Sure.
Put
that
the
makes
parents.
Sense.
The parents need to be there. They're the guardians.
Yeah.
They're the real down-to-earth guardians. And then when the child hits 13, it's like, Mom, then you can take it out.
I don't need you in here anymore.
Exactly. I don't need you. I don't want you. Then, and it's very funny.
I want the movie stars or my whatever, my icons now.
Yes, exactly. And my teacher, my first feng shui teacher, said to me, if there's a teenager in the house, she said, don't go in their room without their permission. She said, make sure you have the permission from the parents that the child said you could go in their room. She said, and don't tell them what to do. She said, if a teenager's room is a horrifying mess, it's because they needed to create a space that other people wouldn't want to go into, and you need to leave it that way. I thought that was very wise.
Yeah.
Very practical. No parent is happy to hear that.
Yeah, that's how I did with my daughter. That was the one room I was like, that I would allow to be a mess. I was like, that's yours.
Yep. Good for you. It takes courage.
As long as that door's closed.
Yep. It was worth you had to risk a broken ankle to go into my daughter's room. And the funny thing is, now that she's a grown woman, oh, mm-hmm. No, everything is right where it belongs. Don't put that over there.
Well, that's, man, the time has gone by fast. Before we run out of time, I mean, I want to let people know how they can contact you if they want to. Do you have a website, or definitely if you have an email address or anything like that, that you can let people, find you?
Happily, all those things. My website is my name. So it's victoriapendragon.com.
Okay.
And that's easy to remember. And my email is my name, Victoria, at my website, at victoriapendragon.com.
You cannot get any simpler than that.
I made it easy.
That is fantastic.
And I love to hear from people. And Sleep Magic has a Facebook page. And if you like the Facebook page, I am on my Facebook page, my Sleep Magic Facebook page, every day, at least twice, often more. I answer questions for people there if they have them. I give advice. I'll go on there and tell people what I'm doing right now, because I find that examples are helpful. So, they like the Facebook page. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at that at sign that they use, at mm-hmm. transformative with a capital T and no E on the end, and then the capital letters RT for art. So it's transformative art.
Okay.
And that's my Twitter thing. And that's because I am an artist, in addition to being a helping person. And I consider sleep magic an art. And people, I believe, can learn that art and use it for themselves easily.
Super. Do you have a link to those pages from your website?
Yes, I do.
Okay, super. So, because your website's definitely easy to find, and then they can find.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so they can get everything else from there.
I am an easy person to find.
There you go. You made it simple. That is wonderful. That is so wonderful.
And you made all this possible. I can't thank you enough.
Oh, well, here, this is what we do. We aim to please.
You got it.
Wonderful. Well, what I'd like to do, we had one question that came in, so I do want to address it came in on something that was not about your material, so I didn't want to bring it in at that time, so I will address it before we end the show. So I just want to do that right before we end here. I want to thank you very, very much, Victoria, for being on the show tonight. So it has been wonderful. This is so wonderful, the information that you have brought through.
Oh, yeah.
It's valuable.
Thank you so
it's fantastic.
Much. Thank you. Thank
so you. Thank you again for being here with us.
My absolute pleasure.
Tracy had a question about the university development. And what we had to do after Mom passed, I just put everything on the back burner regarding the university. But it has been popping its little head up recently. So I have a feeling that's Mom doing her thing over there on the other side. So that's as much as I know right now. There's a few little things happening, enough to say, oh, okay, you want to do something again. So
you haven't forgot about me. I'm still here.
Exactly. And so there's little things. It's not as fast a movement as what we had in the very beginning, but there's little things happening, and it's very definitely not forgotten. And we're probably going to do exactly what we thought originally, doing an online thing first, and we are moving. So it's not forgotten, and we are happening. So just bear with us. We will be doing something very soon, and we'll announce it as we go. And I can see we are out of time now, so thank you, everyone, for being with us. And thank you again, Victoria, for being with us. And it's truly been our honor to be with everyone tonight. And we love you all. Until next week, bye-bye. Make it great. Bye-bye, Shauna. Bye.